Hello and welcome to the Unnamed Automotive Podcast. My name is Sammy Hadj Assad, and with me, as always, is my good friend and fellow automotive journalist, Benjamin Hunting. Say hi to the people, Ben.
Greetings, human listeners.
Greetings to everyone. If this is the first time you're trying our podcast, thank you for trying something new. I usually say that part a little bit smoother and with more confidence.
It's almost, yeah, it's, I'm not going to say anything. I think you can power through.
I will reiterate, though, Ben and I are a pair of automotive journalists, but more importantly than that, we are very good friends. In fact, I don't even need to ask him for confirmation on that fact. I just know it. So instead of asking for confirmation on that fact, I'm going to ask him instead to give us a list of the recent publications that he's written for. Can you do that, Ben?
Do you think that'll save this intro?
Yes.
Okay. You can find my work at Motor Trend. At Motor Trend, at Car Driver, and at Inside Hook. Let's go.
Now, normally me and Ben would have a discussion about how we're going to redo the intro, but we've resorted to physical media instead of digital media, and we can't afford, you know, getting rid of all that tape and doing it all over again.
And also, Sammy is trapped in a room with a 45-minute supply of oxygen. So
that's true.
This is something we've decided to try to see if it
just
injects
the excitement.
Yeah, a little bit of energy injected in the podcast. It's controversial, and his wife is standing by. She has an axe to break down the door and an emergency supply of oxygen if necessary, but I think we can pull this off.
Yeah, I don't know if she knows how to use that axe. I think, and once again, maybe I shouldn't be wasting my time talking about the situation I'm
in. Worry less about the axe and focus more on the time you have left. And try not to think about the fact that the temperature inside that room is rising steadily.
I have noticed that. Basically, what happens is when our call ends, the door will unlock.
If I remember to push a button.
Yes, assuming that all of the smart connected devices make it happen. The door will unlock, and I trust Ben with this, of course. I just don't trust our service providers. They've dropped the ball a few times.
Not very good. I'm not sure why I'm paying so much for the equivalent of a T1 line, but
okay. You can find my work on the internet. I'm readable at driving.ca, autotrader.ca, and let's go with Electric Autonomy Canada.
And you're also visible online, though, aren't you?
Yes, I am visible. You can find me on the YouTube channel of driving.ca. I get to do a bunch of videos. There was my X2 video there, my Prius video, and I think we've got some comparisons coming up as well.
And also, we have our own YouTube channel now for the podcast, but don't get too excited because it's just the podcast audio with a graphic of our logo. We added it to YouTube because some people prefer to listen to stuff on YouTube, and we wanted to be able to serve those people.
Technically speaking, it's the only way to serve Google Podcasts now.
Yeah, Google Podcasts is gone. They replaced it with YouTube Podcasts. Let me tell you, it is a labyrinth to get that thing set up. But it's
automatically changed the title of one of our recent episodes
because it was quote unquote too long. Thank you for the judgment, YouTube.
Yeah. But this week's episode, the title might not be that long because we have one very important truck to talk about this week. And it's the one that Ben drove. It's the 2024. I'm going to make sure I got the year right. 2024 Toyota Tacoma.
That's right. So why is 2024 important, Sammy? Because it's ostensibly the first, I guess, all new Tacoma we've had in quite a long time. We had a refresh a few years ago, but I think that the platform wasn't new. And this time around, it's new platform, brand new engines across the board, different suspension setups, and different price tags all to go with that.
Okay, there's a lot to talk about, but what did you drive in particular?
So I drove in Canada something called the TRD Sport Premium. I guess the rough equivalent in the United States would be the TRD Sport. I'm trying to figure out what options packages it had, because in the US, this is a vehicle. So the Tacoma, the base model SR, starts at $31,000. The TRD Sport that I drove starts at $39,400. In Canada, the Tacoma technically starts at $46,000 for a base model, okay, which is quite a difference. But the model I drove is an $11,000 option for TRD Sport.
Holy moly, Canadians, yeah, getting fleeced. So I also just love the fact that they justify calling this trim level TRD Sport Premium in Canada, But in the U.S., they don't want to gussy it up. It's just the TRD Sport, okay?
Yeah, and so anyway, it's a double cab, which is, I believe, the full four-door version. They also make something called an extra cab, if I'm not mistaken.
An extra door?
Yeah, it has a fifth door that you have to find it somewhere on the body. No, I'm trying to find the exact, because every car company loves to call their crew cab truck something different.
Yeah, okay, what are they? There's super cab, there's crew cab.
So extra cab is the extended cab style with the smaller doors. Okay. And the double cab, which is the one that I had, has the full-size doors. But I will tell you, while we're on this topic, the doors are not huge. Like, the second set of doors felt a bit restrictive. I didn't sit back there. I did use it to haul cargo, which we'll talk about later because there's something important I wanted to bring up about that. But right. I actually had to go and check to make sure this was a double cab and not an extra cab. The other differences between these trucks is...
That's not a good sign. That's really not a good sign. Is this the big one?
Yeah. If you want the 6-foot cargo bed, you have to get the smaller cab, the extra cab. Yeah. The double cab... I'm sorry. That's not correct. The extra cab only comes with the 6-foot cargo bed. The double cab has the 5-foot or the 6-foot. So you have more.
Okay.
Again, Toyota kind of pushing you into more choice by spending more money.
I want that though. If I'm spending all the money, I want to have the most.
You want to spend as much money as possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to be limited by the more money I spend.
So this truck is interesting because this is the first time that Toyota has abandoned its trusty 4-liter V6, which has been in the Tacoma and the 4Runner since before I was born, it feels like.
I think maybe as long as I've been alive, for sure. And now, by abandoning, you're meaning that, like, literally. I don't know if there is another product now on the market. Well,
I mean, I would hope not. I mean, this is not a product old enough to still have a 4-liter V6 in it from Toyota. That engine was designed with slide rules and hand calculations. Much how they, an abacus. Much how they planned the first lunar missions. This is similar. I imagine that's what the engineering sessions were like for this 4-liter V6. But it's been replaced by a much more powerful engine, or a more powerful engine, I believe, on the torque side. It's called the iForce 2.4-liter turbocharged four-cylinder.
Always said this. I've got shoes called iForces, I think. Or maybe they're just called Air Forces. I'm not sure.
It's the same thing, Sammy. A big lawsuit.
And Nike lost?
Nike lost. Toyota swings a big club. Wow. There are two versions of this engine. There's a 228 horsepower version, but you can only get it in the entry level truck. Like the everything.
What is the technical details that separate this one from the other one?
I'm assuming it's tuned. That's the only thing I can think of. Yeah, because every other truck that has access to this engine has instead of the 228 horsepower base motor, they get 278 horsepower and 317 pound feet of torque.
So an extra 50 horsepower.
Yeah.
And You have to jump up into another trim level. I can't understand what
I just
the reasoning like, is for Toyota is
it to feels have unnecessary.
Only the bare base model and that's it.
It's almost like they don't want to sell the SI.
Exactly. It's so ridiculous. It's like it costs us way more to make this base model than it does.
It's the only plausible answer. If you want to spend a lot of money, you can also get a hybrid version of the truck. It is a... I'm trying to find the number here because in an odd turn of events, Toyota has decided to market the trucks completely differently. Like, if you go to the website, there's two ways to build a Tacoma now. Instead of having a Tacoma and then you select the engine, you have to select whether you want the hybrid or the non-hybrid.
And that's different than the other methods of building Toyotas, not just the trucks. Like, when you go to a Highlander... You go to the Highlander, and then you see all 400 trim levels of the Highlander because they're separated by motor, essentially. Oh, but they're all in front of you, like this wonderful buffet of Highlanders.
So I'm trying to find the number on because it isn't. I think it's 346 horsepower, but I want to confirm that before I shoot my mouth off. Why do I not have the number?
It's okay. This is. We'll just tell people it's the first time you've done this.
It's 326 horsepower and 465 pound-feet of torque, which is like a huge boost over the
Torque figure sounds really awesome. That horsepower number seems a little average, I would say.
Well, what they did was they took the turbo engine that I had in my truck and they added a 48 horsepower, 184 pound foot electric motor between the transmission and the engine. And altogether that gives you the 326 horsepower.
Okay, great. Okay, so just talking about the normal non-hybrid motor.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the one that I drove, yes.
And the transmission is, again, an eight-speed or six-speed?
It is an eight-speed because everything else about, like I said, this is an actual modern Toyota truck, which we've not had in a long time, a Tacoma 4Runner. Like, we've had, the only truck that got modernized was the Tundra, and that happened a little bit earlier along the same lines where it went to a hybrid thing as well.
But I also want to talk about the Tundra really quickly because I think when it happened, that redesign, it kind of flew under the radar, and I'm not sure people were as impressed with it. But I think now maybe they've got the pricing down right because I've been seeing a ton of these things all over the place.
Yeah, it might be a pricing thing. I mean, it's hard to say.
Or availability thing. I don't know.
That truck has been an also-ran for so long now that I really don't think very many people are shopping it. I'm not saying it's a bad truck, but it's not a truck that should command the same price as an F-150 or a Dodge Ram. Or Ram, yeah, Ram 1500, sorry.
As the leaders in the segment, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So yeah, hit me with this car. You've been driving this thing with its updated engine and transmission. Is the wheelbase the same? The length? And it, like, usually these things, most cars, new generation, especially when they're doing a total overhaul, get like bigger. So is this a bigger mid-sized pickup truck or
is it about the same size? That's a good question because
it feels
like it's the same size.
Yeah, it probably is. I wouldn't doubt it, which is a good thing, I think.
But
you don't want to encroach on full-size pickup truck territory.
The seating position is different. I mean, you're sitting higher. As I mentioned, it has the two cabs. And even though I had the larger of the two cabs, it didn't really feel all that large inside. I think that it's obviously, you know, if you were to go back 20 years, this is probably the same size as a full-size truck from 2000.
Yeah.
But the
I don't have that time machine. Okay, like I know we keep talking about you had to go back and you take a look at this. Yeah,
used it on something stupid.
I want to try out Pepsi Clear.
Oh my goodness, you didn't want to go back and tell your dad you loved him just before he died.
Hey, no, I don't think my dad has passed away yet. I better call him right now.
the big change in terms of, I guess, design for the truck, aside from the drivetrain, is you can get coil springs on it now.
As opposed to leaf springs
It's split, though. Like, there's three trims at the entry level that all come with leaf springs. And then once you get to, I think, the fourth trim up, you can get coils.
Now, I want to talk to you a tiny bit about the suspension differences, because my understanding was that leaf springs were actually kind of commendable for vehicles with that we're going to be towing or hauling a lot.
You know what? I think that's overrated. I think if you have a well-designed suspension system, you're going to be able to tow and haul. You might see, if you're hauling a very heavy load, I mean actually hauling in the bed, you might see more deflection on the spring if it's a coil.
Yeah.
But I really think that the payoff in terms of smoothness and just comfort in general makes going to coils worthwhile.
And especially because you're not going to be driving around with that bed loaded all the time, right?
No, you're going to be hauling air like everyone else who wants to pick up. It's the SR, SR5, and the TRD pre-runner. Those have old school Leafs.
Interesting.
Yeah. In any case, the truck, I drove it a lot, Sammy. I drove it for about 350 miles. I hauled tires in it twice, which you did not acknowledge, even though I tagged you on Instagram. And we talked about this before the show started recording, so I'm not gonna focus on that too much. And it made almost no impression on me.
What do you mean by no impression on you? You drove it for several hours.
Several hours. I put a, you know, decent amount of time, because some of that was, a lot of that stuff was highway, but I had a decent amount of rural stuff. I was hauling things around. I was going from one small town to the next. I was doing a whole bunch of truck things. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it all, it just kind of felt like an average mid-sized truck. It didn't blow me away in any category. I mean, it had decent power. The interior was fine. It was very Toyota. They had a whole bunch of, it's funny because I like the fact that the inside of the truck has a lot of dials and buttons and whatnot. You can use the controls for the truck when you're wearing gloves, which is important in the winter, but it's also important if you're using your truck to do work stuff. You don't have to take your gloves on and off all the time. But Toyota made all these fake screws and like etched them into these plastic knobs. So it kind of, it's trying to look like they're made of metal and that they're screwed into the dash and it's all billet, but it's not billet. It's just, I guess, fake.
I haven't seen this, and now you're forcing me to find photos of the cabin.
I don't understand why they would do that, but they did, and that's there. It came across as a functional vehicle, with a few exceptions. I didn't like, as I mentioned earlier, I used the inside of the, I bought some, so I bought tires for the Datsun. I hauled those, and then I hauled old Datsun tires to the dump. It did a good job on both of those things, but I also bought some other tires for, I have a tractor now because that's my life. And the tractor has this like pull along mower attachment that has four wheels. And I was looking at those wheels this spring and I realized that each of the tires was like dry rotted to the point where I was afraid they would burst into dust as soon as they rolled. Like it was really bad. I went to Kubota to try and get new tires for it, and the guy's like, they're $240 each. And I'm like, excuse me?
You're like, I see. Where's the exit?
And he's like, he said, no, you're right. That's a ridiculous price. I'm going to see what I can do. So he called me a few days later, and he's like, I found them for $27 each.
And what then, do you like, mean just, by found them? He just hijacked them off somebody else?
Yeah, well, you've seen Fast and Furious, right?
Yeah.
You know how the movie opens where they're in these Civics and they hijack an 18-wheeler?
Yeah.
That 18-wheeler was filled with Kubota tires.
Lawnmowers.
Yeah. So okay, anyway. Perfect.
I gotta talk to your guy later.
I'm telling you this story because I brought those tires home inside the truck in a box. And the box was dirty on the bottom, so I didn't want to just throw it on the rear bench. We've had this
conversation. Why didn't you put it in the bed?
Because, Sammy, I'm not a monster.
Okay.
It was maybe going to rain, and I didn't want to get them wet, and et cetera,
okay,
et cetera.
Okay, fine,
I see. You know how I feel about wet tires.
Yeah, I do.
So, anyway, I wanted to put them in the back of the truck, and you and I have talked numerous times. We have different attitudes about what should be under the seat when you flip up a truck seat. I like it to be flat so I can slide in whatever I want. You like it to have a cargo compartment that has segments that you can organize stuff in, right?
I think you got it backward. I think you got it the other way around. But for today's segment, yes, I want compartments.
So the Tacoma has compartments, which is
basically
probably
that it would be like a trunk for the vehicle.
Yeah,
right?
Except it's not useful as a trunk because the compartments mean you don't have a flat load floor anymore.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a hassle to get the box in, but even more of a hassle, when you pull the seat up, it flops down again immediately every time.
There isn't like a hit, like a strut or something?
There's nothing. I have not driven a modern truck whose rear seat did not stay up as soon as I pushed it up. It's a simple mechanism. Every other truck has one. The Tacoma doesn't. And then the corner of my eye, I noticed that there was a strap with a snap on it. And I had to snap the strap from the bottom of the seat cushion to the top of the seat cushion in order to hold it in place.
You're talking, this Tacoma's got overalls, basically.
Like a peasant, Sammy, I had to perform labor in order to use the rear cargo area. Let me tell you about another vehicle that has this similar type of strap. It's my Jeep Grand Wagoneer, which has a leather strap from the B pillar that you have to attach to a node on the rear seat in order to hold it up once you folded it forward. That truck is 38 years old.
What on earth?
So the fact that I have to do this in the Tacoma, I know this seems like a small point,
no,
but it blows
no.
my mind. Let me tell you a story that's seemingly unrelated.
Seemingly unrelated.
There was a band called Van Halen, and there is a very popular piece of lore surrounding this band that in their rider for every show that they performed, a rider is the contract portion of the contract that describes what they want to be ready for them, how they want the stage set up, what the dressing room should have in it, etc. That the rider for their show contained a section that said they wanted a bowl of M&Ms with no brown M&Ms in it. And everyone used to talk about this and be like, oh, this is like just rock stars being difficult and they can make the lives miserable of the tour people who they're working with. So of course they're going to do it. Actually, the reason that was on the tour rider is because it was a canary in a coal mine for the band and for the touring crew. If they came into the dressing room and looked over at the bowl of M&Ms and saw that there were brown M&Ms in that bowl, it was a signal that the promoter had probably not read the entire contract properly and that there were other things that were going to be missing or wrong. And it was a sign that they had to double check everything at the show immediately before going on stage.
It's about attention to detail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So all of that to say, if the Tacoma has this strap on it, this tiny little annoying strap that is unnecessary and, you know, different from every one of its competitors, what else has been overlooked in the truck, Sammy?
Okay, tell me. What else has... I mean, you
that's
already
what I'm asking
we've
you.
We've got flimsy knobs. We've got...
Well, the knobs aren't flimsy. They're just styled in a silly way.
We've got... a weird base engine. We've got leaf springs on the entry level models. I don't know, man. But what about, like, let's talk about the things that people use the vehicle for, and
that
is hauling
the strap. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, hauling stuff in the bed.
Yes.
So obviously this portion of the vehicle has not changed in terms of usefulness.
Perfectly
right?
Fine, no issues. I wish
it is a rectangular shape. that you would put stuff into.
I wish it had a step in the bumper. I've gotten really used to those. And I'm getting older and it's harder for me to climb into these trucks. But other than that, it's fine.
Okay, so that's step one of a truck. It does that thing decently. Step two of the truck, you can drive it in inclement conditions. Like, let's say, like, non-paved road conditions.
Are you trying to say off-road? Is that the most complicated way to say off-road that I've ever
heard?
So,
basically, we're in areas where...
Where there aren't roads?
Yes. Where you're not driving on the road.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Can sure. Do you think it can handle that? You have a bit of off-road.
I mean, I drove the TRD Sport, which is not off-road special. It had four-wheel drive.
It's not like the non TRD model is suddenly like slammed to the ground and explodes when it hits a pothole.
I wish it was. I wish we still had it. I wish we still had an X-Runner. That was fun.
Yes. Is that what it was called? X-Runner?
Yeah, and you could get a factory supercharger for that truck too. That's a long time ago.
A factory supercharger for that thing. I wanted to say that fact, and I did, but not before you.
The like I said, it drives fine. The engine's fine. One thing that's not fine is fuel economy. I got 20 miles per gallon with a heavy highway component. It's rated at 20 city and 23 on the highway. Those numbers, they're pretty much the same as the V6, which is a little weird. Don't you think?
Why did we switch engines?
I mean, it's certainly not as rough as the 4-liter V6, and the transmission is better. That is for sure. It's smoother all around. But yeah,
outgoing transmission, 6-speed, 5-speed.
I think it was a 6-speed in Tacoma. It was a 5-speed in the 4Runner for sure.
Okay, and you can't get the thing with a manual anymore, though.
You can.
Really?
But only with the Turbo 4, not with the hybrid. I think. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Don't quote me on that. I think it can tow 6,000 pounds, for the for the hybrid, 65 for the non-hybrid. And payload is like almost identical, 1,700 pounds.
So functionally speaking, as a pickup truck, this thing is doing the right things. Now, the other parts of the vehicle that kind of, first of all, the things that bug me, fuel economy is not an improvement over the last one, at least real life usability. What was the other thing I had in mind? In-cabin experience, is it comfortable? Is it...
It's fine. It's the screen... Like so many Toyota products, is more complicated than it needs to be for the gauge cluster. You can access some information some of the time, but not all of the things you want all of the time. And it's tough to even just like reset things like the odometer. You're going to be digging into the infotainment system in order to do that properly. So that's a little annoying, but I wouldn't say there's anything problematic about it.
Okay. And then I think major issues I have that are detracting me from really falling for this vehicle is the pricing doesn't seem super competitive.
Yeah, that is, I think, the pricing and the fuel economy would be the quote-unquote worst aspects.
Those are the red flags here, right?
Yeah. So if you want to get a base truck, I mentioned the price earlier. I think in
31?
Canada, it's 46 and 31 in the US. A base Colorado is about the same price. So I think that they're on the same level there. But... The trim level systems are a little bit different. I think the most expensive version of a Colorado that you can get outside of, say, the ZR2 is the Z71, and that's 41,000. But if you're building your Tacoma, which I was doing, and Toyota apparently decided I wanted to stop, you can build a $52,000 limited.
Can we talk about this $52,000 limited? Why is it $11,000 more expensive than the next trim down?
That doesn't make any sense. The other thing to consider, Sammy, is that limited is not the hybrid.
Yeah, so it's not even more expensive when it gets more expensive.
Even if you buy a ZR2 version of the Colorado, which is a crazy off-road truck, it's 48,000. So it's already cheaper than the limited. So if I wanted to build this hybrid version, man, I don't even want to think about what this is going to cost me, but I'm going to find out.
You're going to do it?
I'm going to do it, even though I didn't review the hybrid. I do want to talk about it. And this truck, the most expensive model is the TRD Pro. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I don't think you're ready.
Okay, I'm not.
It's $63,000.
Holy cow. Okay, why?
The cheapest hybrid is $46,000. So the cheapest cheapest hybrid version of the Tacoma is $2,000 less than the most expensive Colorado.
Okay, but I'm looking at some of the features that these higher-end versions of the truck have. First of all, none of them are that impressive to me. That's a concern. But second of all, if I remember correctly, and I might be really bad at remembering, but I don't think the Colorados have adaptive cruise control?
I don't remember.
I don't think they do. And I think these ones do. So that's one thing. This one has a variable suspension system, an adaptive variable suspension system. They have probably the most standout features on these higher-end models. But again, you're paying a significant chunk more than you would for another Colorado or a Canyon. And I think that's an important thing to talk about. I think those two vehicles are among the best in the class right now.
Which one, Colorado and TRD?
And Canyon.
Oh, Colorado and Canyon are very good. Yeah, I haven't driven the new Ranger, so I can't say there. Frontier is kind of a truck, you know?
Yeah.
It's fine, but it's not really a standout. I really like
it. But it has the advantage of generally being cheaper.
Yeah, and I like, well, a little bit. I like the Maverick a lot, but it's, you know, outside the scope of this conversation, I think.
Yeah, that goes with the Santa Cruz and the Ridgeline, I think.
Now, I have to wonder if the reason why the Tacoma has become so expensive is because Toyota is planning to bring in a compact truck of its own.
Did you just come up with that as we were talking about it?
Yeah.
Really?
You sound shocked.
You just made it up. You just made that up on the spot. You didn't think about it, Ben.
I didn't make it up. I said, I suggested it as a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
What would they, first of all, they probably already have smaller trucks elsewhere in the world, don't they?
No, they don't.
This is the smallest truck they have?
Yeah, they have this and Hilux, which are basically the same thing. Oof.
What would they take? Because the other small trucks are based on a crossover somewhere, right?
Let's go back in time to a truck that we all fondly remember, the ABAT. Do you remember the ABAT?
No.
It was a concept. Look it up. It was a concept truck that Toyota came up with, I want to say in 2010 or 2011, and it was a full compact truck that had...
Jumped the gun by several years.
A unibody.
My understanding is this is a 2007 pickup concept.
Even better. 20 years ago, ABAT was born. And I think we're finally ready for it to come out into the world. You don't like it? Are you thinking it's more of a Scion idea?
It does definitely look more like a Scion idea. Okay. This doesn't tell me much, but that's a long time to go without putting this concept into
a RAV4
fruition. Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's the idea.
Called maybe the
that's
RAV, what they're RAV doing 5.
The RAV 5-foot bed.
Yeah, now you're cooking with gas.
I think that's important to talk about because I'm sure the new generation RAV 4 is on the way, and this might be what they're cooking together. That makes sense. I mean, we've always said that these trucks are getting bigger, and the appetite for the Maverick was really, really high,
and
right?
And remains high. I want to wrap things up in the Tacoma here by saying, I think that Toyota is really not coasting in terms of development, but from a pricing perspective, they're putting a lot of faith into the name. that they're going to have a lot of repeat buyers, and that those buyers are going to convince other people to buy a Tacoma when it's time, and that they're somehow going to be able to justify a $63,000 price tag at the high end. I don't remember what the previous TRD Pro cost, but I'm pretty sure it was in the 50s. So that seems like a really big jump. My experience with the truck was positive, but positive neutral. It's not a truck where I would say to somebody, you need to drive this before you make a decision. I would probably say, just drive the trucks that appeal to you and choose from there. There's not enough in the non-hybrid version of the Tacoma to really make it a recommendation from me, a hard recommendation. I think it's something that should be driven, but so should every other truck in the segment.
It and then alternatively, the pricing of that hybrid model might be prohibitive,
right? Yeah. So once I do drive the hybrid, I'm very curious to see whether the extra performance will justify the price. I think it's going to be hard for that to happen, but I guess it's a possibility.
There was something I wanted to discuss with this whole segment, right? Is there a vehicle in the segment of midsize trucks that you go, you got to drive this? Like, this is the one that sits above the rest. I really think the ZR2 is a special truck, but only if it appeals to that kind of buyer, right?
Which
is
the off-roading. I haven't driven the current generation ZR2. I've driven the Trail Boss, which I liked. It was a good truck. None of these trucks really set my mind on fire. They're all fine. They're all the ones I've driven are all good. They do truck stuff. I think we might be reaching the point of diminishing returns where adding the kind of gear that would make these trucks feel superb or one up their rivals puts them in full-size truck territory in terms of capability. I mean, it's hard to see this TRD Pro and not think this is already full-size truck pricing. Yeah. So I don't know what they can really do here. And it's fine. I think it's great that we have a bunch of competent options. You know, I don't have to be blown away. I'm sure I will like the ZR2 when I drive it because I like the previous generation very much. But that's also a specific vehicle that you're only going to want to buy and spend the extra money on if you're going to make use of it in an off-road situation.
That's right. The other thing worth talking about is I think you're onto something by people kind of like Tacoma, like a cycle of Tacoma buying, right? I think people who own Toyota trucks are impressed with the longevity and the reliability of them and are willing to spring money for that experience again.
Sure, but I think that a lot of that is, again, reputation coasting. You know, we're talking about a brand new truck with a brand new drivetrain and a brand new hybrid system. We don't know anything about reliability.
Okay, speaking of trucks, though, I want to talk about some news that came out of Stellantis. Stellantis, if you remember, is the automaker that designs such vehicles as the Ram 1500, the Jeep Wrangler, and for a long time they made vehicles with these Hellcat motors, one of which was the Ram TRX, or T-Rex for short, which featured 700 horsepower or something like that, and could go very fast, very quickly, and was kind of like this big middle finger to the world of pickup trucks, right?
Sure. I mean, it was a response to the Raptor, I guess, is how you could put it.
So today we're hearing about an update to the TRX in the new generation, mainly because Stellantis has said that V8s are no longer its jam. It can't do this anymore, and is instead the Ram 1500 can only be equipped with a six-cylinder engine, either a naturally aspirated V6 or a twin-turbo inline six, right?
Yes.
That's the Hurricane engine.
Yes.
So now there's a new off-road, I'm going to call it high performance because it has a lot of horsepower, a new off-road high performance truck from Ram called the RHO.
Wait a minute. Don't they already have two other off-road trucks? Isn't there something called the Warlock and something called the Rebel?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. They didn't make a news release on these ones.
Okay.
Not to mention the Power Wagon and the heavy duty rebels, I suppose.
Yeah, right? those are outside the light duty segment. I believe Power Wagon retains the V8.
Ooh, is that because it's a heavy duty truck and doesn't need to conform to certain, you know, emission standards?
Sammy, something? You're drawing a lot of attention to something the government doesn't want you to draw attention
okay,
to.
Okay, fine. The Ram 1500 RHO features a twin turbo inline six that makes 540 horsepower and 521 pound-feet of torque. It's supposed to do 0 to 60 in 4.6 seconds, which is pretty quick for
that's
a truck.
That's everything you want out of a 7,000-pound vehicle is frightening acceleration.
And, I don't know, a lot of people seemed pretty excited when they heard about this.
Who's a lot of people to you?
I mean, people in my circles of other journalists.
Okay.
Okay? which is neat.
I mean,
but I don't get it.
I don't really have much opinion on this truck. I feel like,
why not?
Because I start to check out above 400 horsepower.
You really?
I don't need insane amounts of horsepower in a truck that isn't going to be towing. And even then, if I'm towing, I kind of want insane amounts of torque more than I want insane amounts of horsepower. I feel like, and this is someone who for many years, you know, built trucks and like tried to make performance trucks, and I used to go drag racing with my truck and stuff. But that was a much smaller and lighter vehicle. I feel like at this point, the size of the vehicle, I don't want to be going that fast, and it's just not a great experience. It's more of a party trick. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that this inline six engine exists. I really liked it in the Grand Wagoneer L that I drove a few months ago that we talked about. And I'm glad you can get it in the Ram. I just don't need this kind of performance truck. I feel like maybe this is the ceiling of performance trucks for me.
I think this is the best it should be. I don't know if we need 700 horsepower like performance trucks. And honestly, I kind of dig I think a lot of people really appreciated the flamboyant style of the TRX. It had this wicked wide body look. It had these really cool graphics, and this has all of that stuff, but is less V8, supercharged V8 in it, and a tiny bit less expensive. It's $71,000, which feels like a lot.
That's, you know, just a few thousand more than a
Tacoma
TRD Pro. One of my overriding memories of the TRX is having my partner standing in front of it and having its grill be a foot and a half taller than the top of her head. And
yeah, that's alarming.
That really makes me think a lot about safety, especially in an urban situation. But even in your own driveway, if you have kids and you're driving something like this, where you cannot see the area 5 feet in front of your vehicle and how dangerous that is. And how we've just kind of let that happen. You know, it's just...
Well, we're supposed to be looking out the front and making sure that nobody walks under
it. If you look out the front, you cannot see in front of the truck.
I guess
is what I'm saying. It's impossible.
Moving on from the pickup truck, I want to talk to you about another truck, and that's the Mercedes G-Class. Now, the G-Class is notorious for being unchanging for a really long period of time, and now it's changed several times in a short period of time. And now they're going to offer an electric version of this, of the G-Class. It's called the G-Class EV.
That's
the G580 with EQ technology.
Okay? Is that the full name? Is that the badge? Does it say with EQ technology on the back?
I don't think it does. It just says probably G580.
When you pull down the sun visor, does it say with EQ technology?
I think it does.
That's cool.
It should get, let's say, 300 miles of range. I might have made that up.
How big is the battery?
116 kilowatt hours, which is a big...
No, but isn't that close to the Ford Lightning?
Yeah. Do you think it should be bigger?
I mean, no.
Well, I think it should be bigger. I think the G-Class is always about doing bigger and better. It's kind of like a Hummer, but a German one.
So there's two batteries you can get with the Lightning. One is 98 kilowatt hours, and the extended range is 131. So the Ford is 30% bigger.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to tell you about. There's a new an electric G-Wagon. I also have to tell you,
before we move on from the
headline. The headline. Hit me with the punchline here.
The punchline is this is the most attractive EV that Mercedes-Benz makes, right? Because it's the only one that doesn't look like a jelly bean.
Yes. It looks like a totally normal vehicle.
Yeah. I mean, but there's a GLB that's electric too, right?
Yeah, that actually looks pretty
good. That looks pretty good. But like, I guess what I'm saying is the conversion cars look nice. The non-conversion cars are anonymous, and we discussed this recently on the show.
And then the final thing I want to talk to you about this week is that Ford is realizing that it shouldn't have made really big, heavy, electric SUVs and trucks.
It's almost like there was a finite market for those. And once everyone who bought them had one, there was no one left to sell to. And to further that analogy, it's almost as though having a variety in your lineup allows you to expand your customer base. Am I off base here, Sammy?
No, you're totally on board. You have to recall that Ford in particular was one of the first automakers to shun the car as a class of vehicle and decided that they're going to make SUVs only.
Except
and
then, for the Mustang, asterisk Mustang.
But the Mustang EV, which is the Mach-E or whatever, is a crossover. I mean, yes. It's essentially a crossover.
Yes.
And so that strategy continued towards their EV strategy, and now they're stuck with these massive this portfolio of massive vehicles that they're trying to electrify, and I think they're really not digging this you know, mountain ahead of them.
And not just that, but they have invested in an infrastructure that only produces these large vehicles. So they have assembly lines and factories devoted to building Lightnings and Mach-Es. And if you don't have anything else to put, you can't put an ICE down those assembly lines, from what I understand. So if you're idling those assembly lines, you're losing out on that investment. It's like setting money on fire. Whereas if you had a more varied number of offerings, you could move back and forth from building Mach-Es to building a small hatchback like the Bolt was, or going back to the trucks when those become popular again.
So what they're saying now, after realizing, you know, that they're kind of, I don't know if the word is struggling, but like reading the tea leaves that their future is looking a little bit dimmer than it used to be. Ford is saying that they're waiting on advancements in EV batteries.
How convenient would it be if every time you were in a bad situation, you could say you were waiting on something that doesn't exist for that situation to get better?
I do that all the time. Yeah, of course.
Like I didn't write that article last week because I'm waiting on a system that will write it for me.
No, you're not waiting for that system. No, you're waiting for system. You believe that different news will overwrite, of course, what you're about.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Why write
that
about today's news when tomorrow's news is right just around the corner? That's
exactly
a very strong argument.
They believe that there's something called lithium iron phosphate batteries.
There is. I have one in my house right now.
What is the short term for this? LFP batteries?
LIFE4 or LIFEO, I think, is something like that.
And they believe that this will help accelerate certain EV features.
LIFEPO4, I think, is what that is.
That rolls off the tongue, to be honest.
Well, it's the battery that I have inside the power station that I bought recently from EcoFlow.
We will have fewer technical difficulties in trying to run our podcast. We're still going to actually know that we shouldn't do that.
Yeah, when the power goes out, the priority
we need to do the podcast.
Definitely going to be the podcast. I'll be shivering here. I'm like, I need the last kilowatt hour in this battery is going to go into the show.
Okay, so anyways, these batteries are supposed to deliver, I mean, like every other new battery that technology that comes, you can guess, will be able to be recharged in some unbelievable span of time, right?
Yeah, so my battery that I bought is 2 kilowatt hours, and you can recharge it in an hour. It's very quick. And they also make some that can recharge from a level 2 charger if you wanted to do that. If you wanted to, you know, if you're out of power, you can go down the road to somewhere that has power and theoretically do that very quickly. But the other thing about the iron-based lithium type of chemistry is that it offers almost no memory effect from recharging. So it can recharge much. You can have many more cycles before you start to notice degradation, which would be a good thing.
So that's a big deal. That's what they're hoping for. But the other thing that they're doing is that they've got this the Silicon Valley-based group, this Ford Silicon Valley-based group, and it's being led by this ex-Tesla executive. I don't know if that's a pro or a con. His name is Alan Clark. And these people are working on the next generation platform of smaller and more affordable EVs, which the quote is, Ford is betting will be a big help in winning over urban dwellers.
It's almost like they could have been building these from the beginning.
Yeah. Gee, really?
R.I.P. Common sense, I guess.
This is, R.I.P. Common sense. Ford coming to its senses about smaller, more affordable vehicles. Shortly after, we've seen GM having similar comments about bringing back the Bolt nameplate in a more smaller, affordable car. And we've learned that the pricing of the Equinox EV is actually going to be pretty attractive as well.
Yeah, I think something around like 31,000, and then with the rebate that it qualifies for, it drops to something like 26, which is pretty good for the size of, you know, it's a small crossover that's fully electric. And assuming it doesn't have the same problems that we saw with the rollout of the Blazer, was it the Blazer that had the problems?
It was the Blazer, yeah. They had a software issue. They had several software issues that need to be sorted out. The car had a stop sale and a recall, and I think they're being sorted out now. But yes. Yeah.
So yeah, that would be, I think, a big win. For
Chevrolet. If you're angry like we are about the lack of affordable EVs, the apparently there is a brighter future ahead, but we just have to hope these people are still working on the job here.
And if you want to write to us about your anger and express it and have us engage with it, I mean, You can do that. There's a few ways to do it. You can find us on social media. Sammy is on the mess that is formerly known as Twitter, where he is at Sammy_ha, like you're laughing. You can find me on the friendlier Instagram at Hunting Benjamin, or email me the old-fashioned way, benjamin@benjaminhunting.com, or go to unnamedautomotivepodcast.com and fill out the submission form, the contact form, click the button, and it ends up in our inbox.
While you're over at our website, unnamedautomotivepodcast.com, you should check out all of our previous episodes. There's usually photos of the cars that we're talking about, as well as links to the stories that we've written about the vehicles. And you can also find a way to kind of follow the podcast. If you aren't subscribed to our podcast, there's a bunch of buttons at the top of the site that allow you to subscribe and pretty much get the next episode as soon as it's available, which is usually on Sunday. But, you know, you don't have to worry about it if you just subscribe.
All right. Sammy, what are we going to be talking about next week?
Well, next week, I recently drove this Chevrolet Traverse, and I'm not allowed to tell you how it drives. I'm under something called an embargo, which prevents me from doing so, or I will lose my professional reputation, of which is it's already very, very low.
In tatters, even.
Yes. So I'll talk about that next week when I'm allowed to. It's a crossover, in case I don't think that's a driving impression. I think I'm allowed to tell you that.
Too late, career over.
Oh, sorry. No. Sorry. Okay, what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to be talking about a less career-limiting vehicle, the BMW X2. I know that you drove it recently, and I'm currently driving it, and I'm just going to do a bit of an update to give you my thoughts.
Very cool. I can't wait, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.